The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So hello and welcome to the beginning of a new series. And this series will go for 2 weeks, 10 days. And it will be on the topic of the Eightfold Path. And in a sense, I gave an introductory talk to this that you don't have to listen to, but yesterday morning, Sunday morning at IMC. And and I'm happy to continue now on this topic. And so the Eightfold Path is sometimes called the Noble Eightfold Path, because it's intimately associated with the nobility or the dignity or the fullness or the freedom of the Buddha and the people who followed his path. There's something very profound about this eightfold path. And there's a way in which we might consider that this is the most central, most important teachings of the Buddha. And we see that whether it actually happened or is how the tradition has recorded it, the very first teaching the Buddha gave was on the Eightfold Path. And the last teaching he gave before he died was the Eightfold Path. After he was enlightened, he went to find the people who he had practiced with before this, who hadn't become enlightened, to tell them his good news, that he had found what they were looking for. And the first thing he said to them when he found them is that there is a middle way between indulging in the senses and denial of the senses, of asceticism. And what is this middle way? It's the Eightfold Path. And usually, I'll recite what these are. Usually it's done in English with the word right. But it means something like, more like complete or consummate. It's, often in modern Buddhism, the Eightfold Path is kind of introduced as the beginning teaching for Buddhism, for beginners. In the time of the Buddha, it seemed like the teachings on the Eightfold Path were the end of the path. It was teachings relevant for people who are most mature along the path. And so what's wonderful is that it can work, it functions both ways. And to think that you know what the Eightfold Path is because you've had them before, learned them before, is to not understand that they're actually very advanced practices as well, or they represent the full culmination. And so rather than calling it each of the eight steps of the Eightfold Path right view, right intention, I like to, this 2 weeks, call them whole. There's a whole view. There's the whole attitude. I'll explain that, why I say that way. There is the whole speech. There is whole action. There is whole lifestyle. There is whole effort. There is whole mindfulness and whole concentration. Or wholesome, maybe, is a nice way to include the whole. And so we'll go into this, but the idea is it includes all of who we are. It's not meant to be exclusion of anything. This idea of not sensual desire, not being lost in that world, and not being involved in asceticism, included this idea of the whole path, the whole life, is the lived life. It's the life that we live wholly and completely. And it's not a disconnection from life. Before his enlightenment, the Buddha did practice the meditation practices taught by the great meditation teachers of his time, but two of them. But both of them taught what's called the formless jhanas. They told the deepest form of experiencing a complete nothingness or a complete neither perception or non-perception, a kind of radical kind of non-experience of the usual world that we live in. And the Buddha was offering something different. He was offering how to become whole and complete. And rather than the deep meditation practice into a kind of nothingness, it was a deep meditation into the fullness of who we are in the most unified, peaceful, harmonious way in which we can really experience this lived life of who we are. So he began this when he came to his fellow practitioners, who we assume were really good practitioners. He presented them the Eightfold Path. At the end of his life, he was dying. He was dying outdoors under the canopy of two sal trees, majestic trees, kind of the redwood trees of northern India. And people knew that he was dying, and people came to see him, and he allowed people to come to visit him. And he was fading away. And there was a wanderer, a non-Buddhist seeker of truth, who heard that he was dying nearby and had heard that it was quite rare to have someone be born and be a Buddha and to be able to encounter one. So he went that night to visit the Buddha to ask his questions. And he approached Ananda, the Buddha's attendant, and said, "I'd like to ask the Buddha a question." And Ananda said, no, he's weak, he's dying, this is not the time. And so Sabada, this wanderer, asked again. "No," said Ananda. He asked again. And I think Ananda said no a third time, which in India, ancient India, was really a big deal. But the Buddha overheard this. The Buddha said this in reply. The Buddha overheard this conversation between Ananda and Subhadra, and he called to Ananda, "Enough, Ananda. Do not hinder Subhadra. Let him see me. For whatever Subhadra asks me, he will ask in quest of enlightenment, not to annoy me." So then Subhadra was able to come to the Buddha and ask his question. He asked the Buddha this question. "All the wanderers, the seekers, and the Brahmins who have their sects and have their followers, who are teachers, well-known and famous as founders of schools, and popularly regarded as saints," and he lists a series of them, "have they all realized the truth as they all make out, or have none of them realized it, or have some realized it and some not?" So he wants to know, all the other teachers besides you, have any of them realized the truth? So this is like a yes or no answer. Has any of them done this? The Buddha replies this way. He often, when people ask him, "What is the truth? Who is it that teaches the truth?" He then answers, he doesn't want to answer that question directly, but he answers this way. "Enough, Subhadra, never mind whether all or none or some of them have realized the truth. I will teach you the Dhamma, Subhadra. Listen and pay close, and I will speak." Yes. So rather than saying who has the truth, the Buddha is going to say, "This is the Dhamma, this is the teachings that I have." Maybe in a sense he's saying, maybe this is the truth. So this is his last teaching before he dies. "In whatever Dhamma, in whatever teaching and discipline, way of practicing, in whatever Dhamma and discipline, the Noble Eightfold Path is not found. No spiritual seeker is found of the first, second, third, or fourth level of awakening. But such spiritual seekers can be found of the first, second, third, and fourth level of the Dhamma and discipline, there the Noble Eightfold Path is found. Now, Subhadda, in this teaching and discipline, the Noble Eightfold Path is found, and in it are to be found spiritual seekers of the first, second, third, and fourth grade level. Those other schools are devoid of spiritual seekers who have attained these levels of awakening. But if in this one the monks were to live the life of wholeness, the world would not lack the enlightened ones. So here the Buddha is saying he doesn't want to engage in philosophy, he doesn't want to engage in truth claims of the nature of reality, the nature of experience, the nature, you know, of metaphysics. He's saying it's the Noble Eightfold Path that is not as a beginner practice, but the people who have actualized the Noble Eightfold Path in their lives, those who are living wholly and completely in this world, not apart from the world. Often Buddhist monks are considered to be monastics, are considered somehow being separated from the world. And in a way they are. They're separated from the ordinary social life of the world, or commerce life, or the ordinary ways in which people are kind of caught up in desires and aversions and preoccupations. But they're not separated, you know, they're still part of the world, a part of the whole, holding the whole world in their view, the whole world in their heart, I hope. And this wholeness is represented by the Noble Eightfold Path. And this Eightfold Path here, as I just said, represents the culmination, the first, it comes with some degree of awakening, of being set free, or deep realization. And here is where this, not the Eightfold Path as a teaching appears, but the Eightfold Path appears as a maturation of the spiritual practitioner. We mature into the Eightfold Path. And these people who are fully and wholly here in this wholeness, in this completeness, in this in a rightness or this harmony of life. So, in the beginning of his teaching, at the end of his teaching, the last thing bracketing the whole 40 years of his teaching was this idea of the Eightfold Path as being central to what he had to teach. And in doing that, the Eightfold Path is about a personal transformation. It's how we get transformed is not the truth that we hang on to. It's not to hanging on to this is the true teachings, this is the true experience, this is the true state of mind, in a sense. It's not like a truth, but rather it's a whole way of being transformed. It's a personal change deep in the heart, deep in ourselves, where we become not divided, not caught, not attached in a way that limits us or makes us partial, but a way that by letting go of the divisiveness, by letting go of the way we are at war with ourselves or conflicted with ourselves or caught in attachment, that we become whole. So that's what I'll do. So we'll go through now the next eight talks, the Eightfold Path, and starting with Right View tomorrow. And then the 10th talk will be kind of a conclusion after these, going through the eight. So a very important teaching, and hopefully that you'll understand that these are not only for beginners, but even for the most advanced practitioners of Buddhism, that these are extremely relevant and important. The Noble Eightfold Path. Thank you.